This is HPC Wire Soundbite, your weekly source of commentary and insight on the HPC stories shaping the industry. With Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360 Research. And now, here are your hosts, Michael Feldman and Addison Snell.
Quantum computing goes commercial.
And Cray launches GPU supercomputer.
Hello, everyone, and good morning for HPC Wire Soundbite for May 27, 2011. Available every Friday on iTunes and Stitcher. I'm Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and I'm joined by Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360 Research. Hey, good morning, Addison.
Good morning, Michael. How are we doing today?
We're doing well. A lot of nice news this week.
Got a long weekend ahead.
Yes.
Things are looking up, right?
Yeah. I mean, ISC's coming up. The news is kicking up. We had two really interesting news items this week.
Well, you know, I was expecting the news to start picking up prior to ISC, just as you were, but I admit I was surprised by the first story. You've got one from D-Wave. I hadn't heard from them in a while.
Yeah, D-Wave is this quantum computing company. They've been around for, I don't know, since 2005, I think even before that. Mm-hmm. And they've been putting out, you know, prototypes of their quantum computing system for a while, over the past several years. They had one back in 2007 they demonstrated. And this week, they actually sold one. They have a 128-qubit supercomputer called the D-Wave 1. And they talked about it very briefly a week or two ago. And sure enough, this week, they sold one.
Yeah, I mean, 2007, 2008, that's right when we were talking to them a lot about their demos and their potential launches, and people were still excited about quantum. And then we kind of hadn't heard from them for a while, and I got to the point where I was thinking, I guess it just didn't work. And, you know, we were all talking about GPUs and accelerators, and then all of a sudden they show up and say, all right, we sold our first one. Here it is. It works.
And, well, supposedly it worked. I mean, Lockheed Martin, which is not your fly-by-night organization, they bought one.
Yeah, it's unlikely that Lockheed just got hoodwinked and they bought something that's a paperweight. Presumably they've tested it and decided that it's worth some money, and they're going after it here. So quantum computing, we've got one now.
Yeah, and there has been some activity from D-Wave. They got written up in a Nature article supporting the fact that actually quantum computing is taking place inside this thing. It's a certain type of quantum computing. They call it quantum annealing. It's not your garden variety system, quantum or otherwise. I mean, it's like this cryogenics thing where they have to cool the thing down to near absolute zero, and it's shielded from magnetic and radio waves. I mean, it's quite a production to get this thing going, but supposedly they've got, you know, true quantum mechanics going on here, and they're able to produce some very interesting results. And obviously, yeah, Lockheed must have done some due diligence to make sure they were going to get something useful out of this.
Well, I mean, yeah, quantum computing, they wind up looking very impressive by the time you put them all together. They're built out of, you know, atoms. And you put this, you say, well, where's the chip? Intel holds up chips for all of its demos. In this case, you know, you're holding up a prescription pill bottle saying all my atoms are in here, but don't blow on them and they're invisible, right?
Right.
So it's a very impressive architecture. You know, as much as I'm saying all of a sudden it came out of nowhere, I'm not surprised by who bought it. The fact that the first one would go to Lockheed makes a lot of sense to me. We'd been following quantum computing for a while, and quantum computing, in theory, was always going to be good for certain types of applications where you have to explore broad probability spaces to winnow it down to, you know, the readable solutions. So, you know, Lockheed is in a lot of those areas in signal processing and cryptography, you know, even in weather simulation or things like that, which Lockheed gets its finger into. So getting it somewhere on the government contractor side makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, the unfortunate thing here is we won't really be able to see what they're going to do with it specifically. I mean, if a national lab had purchased one, and maybe that'll happen, that would be really cool. Then we could see sort of the results of different types of things. I mean, D-Wave likes to talk about this thing. It's not for typical computing problems, but it does a lot of typical HPC problems. It's sort of artificial intelligence stuff, natural language processing, computer vision, bioinformatics, risk analysis, pattern matching things that HPC does on its own with conventional technology. It would be interesting to have a public government entity buy this and start working some workloads through that and seeing some results. I hope that actually happens.
Well, yeah, but you got to start with the first one, and it seems like the first one is most interesting for likely something on the defense side. And you're right, we probably won't get to see the exact benchmarks of what precisely is getting run on it. But what do we think about quantum computing in general? We've been talking about GPUs and accelerator architectures for a while. We haven't talked about quantum in a long time. It used to be 10 years ago, people thought this was going to be the new architecture that we were all going to be starting on this decade. Do we think it's still coming?
Yeah, I think it is coming. I mean, this particular architecture, if it proves itself, it could take off. I mean, it's in a way, I mean, all the quantum guys are right. It doesn't compete with conventional architectures. It's a different set of problems. I think there is quite an overlap in HPC, but in the rest of mainstream computing, there isn't. It solves, these NP complete problems that sort of have their own application set. So it's sort of not like it's going to make supercomputing go away or any other types of computing, but it'll be a nice adjutant to what we've got. And, it scales things that don't scale polynomial, that they scale exponentially. It solves those problems very well. So it's very efficient at some of the problems where you'd have to build, a computer 1,000 times as large to get the same answer. Here you can just add a few more qubits and you're in.
Yeah, I mean, when you say it doesn't compete with conventional architectures, I think that's, marketing code for it's not going to be cost competitive for most applications. But clearly they're hoping to find some. And, if D-Wave is still out there, I think that's a reasonable assumption that they could sell not just a first, but a second, third, fourth. They might find their top 10 or a dozen customers that need something like this, and that could sustain a small company from one generation to the next, because as you point out, they should be excelling at applications where it's not just a question of I'm going to bolt on another rack of x86 and do it faster. Right. It should be a matter of it's a really particular application type that's best solved in this fashion.
Right, and like I said, a lot of these things are traditional HPC technical problems, so there is that sort of competition, I think, that will go on if this is successful. And nobody knows how expensive this system is. There was some stuff flying around on different reports on the internet that this D-Wave 1 system cost about $10 million. When I talked to D-Wave, they wouldn't provide an answer. They just said it's competitive with, high-end computing in general. But
Again, that doesn't mean anything, and it's also kind of tough to size. I mean, when you say it's a 128 qubit system or a 512 or a 1024 qubit system, there's nothing in your mind space to benchmark that against. I mean, you can look up what a qubit is and get your head around this idea that each zero and one is some sort of vector extrapolation superposition of zeros and ones. But, fundamentally, it's hard to say how big a 512 qubit system is until you start seeing what can it do. And in this case, we're not really going to see it other than Lockheed believes in it.
Right. I mean, maybe Lockheed will talk about it in a general sense. But yeah, I'm hoping D-Wave is able to sell more systems and we do see some real applications being developed. This is a 128 qubit system. I think they're looking to a 512. Back in 2007, they were even talking about a 1,024 qubit system, which would be, exponentially more powerful than these others. So, I kind of wish D-Wave luck here. I think this is going to be an interesting machine to follow and see if we can find some applications that do interesting things here.
Right. And meanwhile, we were saying, all right, here's the quantum one. Back on the GPU side, which we're talking about more and more, Cray has joined the GPU game with the launch of its new GPU supercomputer.
Right. They unveiled the XK6 this week on Tuesday. Basically, it's what they've been talking about for a while without a name. This their XE6 architecture, basically, with a GPU addition to it. It's a different kind of blade. They've put one of the second generation Fermi, NVIDIA Fermi GPUs, and they're matched it up with an AMD Interlagos CPU, which CPUs are coming out.
This is still the Gemini interconnect, the one that was the follow-on to C-Star.
Right. This is the Gemini interconnect. This is the XE6 technology that they brought with the Baker, used to call Baker architecture. So it's all compatible with the XE6 infrastructure. In fact, you can mix these blades in with XE6s, and you can have this hybrid CPU and then GPCPU system as well. But yeah, they announced this. They were able to do this because NVIDIA announced their second generation GPU last week, and this is what's going into the Cray XK6. So they were able to talk about it, and even though it's not available right now, they're looking to ship sometime in the second half of this year.
And they also announced that CSCS in Switzerland was going to be the first major customer in their press release as an upgrade to the existing XE6M system, PISPALU, at CSCS, which is interesting to me because Cray also announced last week an upgrade to the other Cray CSCS supercomputer it has there, Monte Rosa, the Cray XT5, getting upgraded to a Cray XE6. So back-to-back upgrades for Cray going into CSCS in Switzerland.
Yeah, the Swiss really seem to love those Crays. they're very high on them. And yeah, they're... That's one of these things about these systems, and Cray talks about this quite a bit, the upgrade path. So you can turn an XT5 and an XT6 into an XE6 with the Gemini interconnect edition, and then you can turn, you know, the XE6s into XK6s basically by adding the XK6 blades, so or the GPU module. So it's all sort of like this continuous scale. So I think customers do sort of appreciate that. They keep their investment. These systems obviously aren't cheap. We're talking about millions of dollars in most cases. So they have a nice little upgrade path here, and I think they're going to keep that. In fact, they talked about a little bit about the next generation GPUs, which I'm assuming they're talking about Kepler here. They're going to be able just to pop those in to the XK6 blades without even replacing the rest of the infrastructure. So they've even got an upgrade path on the GPU side.
Yeah, so you know, this is good for Cray getting in with these the upgrades across the board. Now, this is continuing the trend that we were talking about last week with all the international systems, and especially with GPUs. Now we're going into ISC, and we've got these European systems now upgrading on GPUs. So the Americans going to get on board here or what?
Yeah, they will. I mean, I think there's stuff in the works. I mean, Cray, I'm sure, has some deals in the works. I'm guessing that system at Oak Ridge that Oak Ridge has been talking about is going to be a Cray system. It's probably going to be one of these systems. It's just not a signed deal yet, and it's not public. But we're going to start seeing these systems in the U.S. for sure. And now that Cray has this, at least in the second half of the year, I'm sure it's going to be selling some of these to the labs. We'll be seeing these. And at ISC, we're going to see more GPU systems on the top 500 list, not this particular computer, but definitely more of the traditional GPU cluster-based computers.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right, and I think there's a certain regrouping here in terms of how the American government and academic money is going to get spent. You know, U.S. budget is still a mess. A lot of state budgets are still a mess. So, it's going to take a while on the U.S. side to figure out how that money is going to get spent eventually, or if there is any money to get spent. It's just that I'm thinking back already to supercomputing last year, where we were saying, gosh, the U.S. kind of got its tail whipped coming out of there, and then we've come through the entire first half of the year, and most of our big installation news has been in Europe and Asia still. Plus, we came out with our own worldwide forecast with higher growth rates outside the U.S. than in it.
Yeah, and I think one of the problems in the U.S. is it's a bigger market. It's a bigger players' system. So there's a lot more momentum in like the current, you know, contracts. I mean, they're flushing stuff out of contracts now that were in the works, you know, 2 or 3 years ago. So the GPUs are going to take a while to get into these systems, but they're going to be there. It's just a little slower in the U.S. There's more momentum. It's a bigger sort of market and a bigger entity than some of these more nimble countries like China and some of the smaller countries. They can turn around those systems a little bit faster.
China's a nimble country now. Is that what we're saying?
I would say in the HPC space it is nimble because they didn't have this legacy of systems or software that they needed to contend with or organizations and bureaucracy. So,
well, yeah. What I will say that the Chinese government is definitely keyed into engineering and science as key differentiators, and that's where the investments are going and probably will continue to go. So we'll keep watching it. International supercomputing just a few weeks away.
Yep, just a few weeks gearing up for that. So, yeah, and we'll be obviously following the news in the run-up to that. I think it's definitely heating up as the summer heats up. So I guess until next week, Addison.
All right. Thanks a lot, Michael. Good talking to you as always.
All right. Good talking to you.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to HPC Wire Soundbite with Michael Feldman and Addison Snell. Got a question or comment for Michael or Addison? Email soundbite@hpcwire.com. HPC Wire Soundbite is available every Friday afternoon from iTunes or at hpcwire.com. HPC Wire, the leading source for global news and information covering the ecosystem of high productivity computing.